This morning will be in Exodus chapter 3, verses 10 through 12. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, but I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain.
Good morning. Good to see everybody. We're going to kind of finish up trying to answer the question of who I am. And wanted to start with this passage in Exodus 3 because Moses isn't the only one. David said it as well when God called him to do some things. They asked, who am I? And it is the common response for many who are called by God to do something. And because nobody feels, or rarely does somebody feel completely adequate and ready to do the job that God asks them to do. And often when we define ourselves, by our abilities and our ability to do something. But God answers Moses, not telling him, well, you have this strength or you have that strength or you... He doesn't tell Moses any of those things. God tells Moses, I'm with you. You're completely adequate as long as I'm with you. Doesn't matter about your abilities and your talents or your skills. If I have asked you to do something, you'll be able to do it with my help. And so who we are can be thought of like Moses did and like we started even this whole series of lessons, thinking about what defines us, and you can define yourself in a lot of ways. You can define yourself by, your role as a parent, as a husband or a wife, or as a child, a parent. You can define yourself at your job. You can define yourself by your, talents or skills or habits. You can define yourselves in a lot of different ways. But actually, almost all of those I find to be inadequate to truly answer the question of who am I. And one of the reasons why, I kind of introduced it the way I did, and then I spent a couple of weeks looking at ways that we might answer that question of who am I, is that I think all of those, they not only are inadequate, they often change. And so we might be, a child, and we're obeying our parents, but that won't remain that way forever. We can obey them, but that will only be as long as they're alive. Someday, under most circumstances, you will outlive your parents. And when you do that, you'll still be a child, but you won't have anybody there to obey. And so, not much different than like I talked about myself. It's like, so I was a husband. I'm not a husband anymore. You can define me as a widower, but, I don't know if I want to define myself that way or if it's just the reality of it. But those, every one of those things change. If I define myself as this ability or that ability, will you have that ability forever? No. Will you, if you define yourself in some way, most likely almost every ability or capability or role you have will change throughout your life. You won't have been in those roles when you were young. You'll take on those roles, as you become, an adult. And then at some point, you will give up those roles because you will be unable to do them anymore. So defining ourselves by things that change or what I might call mutable. And I don't mean not speaking. Let's get to the next one. But those things that change in our lives. And so I wanted to go back and just remind you of the introduction. I introduced it by talking about the ways people can define themselves and how you can foster all of those things, how you can grow in them and tend to them. And you do that in part because you want to live a joyful, contented life. And when your realities don't meet your expectations, discouragement or disappointment is often the difference between those two things. If you have everything you ever expected, more than likely you're going to feel great joy and feel happy and feel content. But if, on the other hand, you expected certain things and you didn't attain those things, no matter how much you did attain, you're going to feel a sense of discouragement, disappointment. And so sometimes we have to adjust expectations or reality in order to be content and live joyful lives in this world. But when we think about how does that apply to who I am, well, if I grow up thinking I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it turns out I'm not, how will I feel about myself? There's a good chance I'm going to feel disappointed. If I feel like, you know, I'm owed certain things. I think it's one of the mistakes happening a lot in society. This concept, I kind of commented on it maybe a month ago in our daily readings. This idea that every generation is going to have it better than the generation before, that's a fallacy. That is an unproven, in fact, it's proven throughout history, that just doesn't happen. Sometimes that happens for generation, might be a little better, but this concept that we're always progressing and every generation is going to have it better than the generation before, that has not been proven to be true throughout history. All just the history of Israel. There are generations that had it good and then there are generations that had it bad. And the waxing and waning of what happens throughout history isn't under our control. And so this idea that, you know, I have to be able to have everything my parents had or my grandparents had, or I have to have everything better than they did. Why? Why would that be your expectation? And if people have given you that expectation, they have set you up for failure. Because at some point there will be a generation that suffers. Will you be the generation that suffers? Don't know. We can look to, you know, my parents, some of your grandparents. Well, sometimes people call the greatest generation because of what they went through, you know, up through World War II and the Great Depression. Why do people call them the greatest generation? If you ask many of them, they can describe the horrific beginnings of their life. Life wasn't great. Life was terrible. The greatest generation are mostly those people who were born after the Roaring Twenties or during the Roaring Twenties and grew up with a generation of poverty, with world wars spanning their lives, who grew up without much. So what made them great? Not the circumstances of their life. And so often we kind of are deceived into thinking that, you know, we should have everything everybody else has had. But that's not the expectation God has placed and given to us. It's not what he told us. He actually does teach us a lot about contentment, and that's a separate lesson. But in order to overcome this discouragement, we align our expectations with the reality. That's what's necessary for joy and contentment. If I'm always wanting more, I'm not going to feel content. If I expect that I deserve more, I deserve better, then I will suffer and think and not feel joy, not feel happy, not feel contentment. Finally, you know, 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 2, I kind of quoted this passage, but those two verses talk about praying for all people, even kings and authorities. And the purpose of all that praying was that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. Well, if your reality is peaceful, quiet, godly, and dignified, but that doesn't describe the life you want, how are you going to feel about that life? If what you want is exciting, you want excitement, adventure, you want, you know, you want lots of money and lots of stuff. the big house on the hill. But you have these four things. How will you feel if with these four you don't have lots of money and you don't have the house on the hill and you don't have great adventure? In fact, yesterday I just heard on the radio I've heard some of her music, Halsey. Some of you may know it. She was publicly commenting on her life, whether she has chosen the right path, because she's so unhappy. This is a famous singer with a lot of money who is contemplating, why is my life so lousy? Most of us think, well, how can somebody in that position feel like life is lousy? Easy. Because that's actually the norm. And unless we learn to be godly and dignified with a quiet, peaceful life, regardless of whether that's with money or without money, because you can do all four of those things in both situations, then you're going to be not fulfilled, not happy. And so this idea of identifying ourselves, this concept that has become so popular, and it really goes back, when I think about it, all the way, you know, maybe in the 70s, 60s, when people started defining themselves by their sexuality. What tempts them sexually is what became to their defining thing of who they are. Would that define David? Solomon? It's like, we choose so often things that change, that don't matter, to be the central things of our lives, and then wonder why we're unhappy. And so this idea of self-identifying as, you know, I can pretend to be whatever I'd like to be. I'd love to be, I remember in a meeting one time, people asking, it's like, well, you know, if you could not fail at all, what would be the thing you would do? Besides just being a Christian. And we did this actually in a Wednesday night classes at home studies years ago. And I said, I'd be an NFL quarterback. Because when it comes to sports, in which I love sports, but there's only one thing in all of sports that stands out above every other. And it isn't playing football. I didn't say playing football. If I wasn't the quarterback, I wouldn't want to play football. But being a quarterback in football, to me, is the greatest sport that I've ever competed in. And I would never succeed in the NFL. Would have trouble succeeding, you know, at a Division III college, let alone, you know, anything above that. And so, but if I couldn't fail, it's like, oh, I'd love to do that. But if my expectation is I'm going to be unhappy unless I do that, what would happen to me? I'm going to prepare myself for disappointment. So, you are whom God says you are, not whom you choose to be. You have the talents you have because you didn't choose your talents. You can grow your talents. You can grow your abilities. But you can't change your flesh, your blood. You can't change so much about yourselves that you've been born with, that you basically have to figure out in life, what is it that I'm capable of? What abilities do I have that I can use not only to provide for myself, but provide for others? That's what becoming an adult is about, learning those things about yourself. And so here's the list of immutable things that described us, which I kind of talked about in the second and third lessons. Defined by what I do. Am I defined by what I do, whether that's good or bad, righteous or wicked? And in Scripture, we do see that, don't we? We are sinners. But then we can also be godly and walk in godliness. And if I practice that and I do those things, it can be defined that way. And so you can define yourselves by what you do, good or bad. But does it stay that way? Is that a permanent situation that can't change? Either way, if I'm doing all this good, does that mean I can't change and become and start practicing wickedness? No. If I'm practicing wickedness, does that mean I cannot change and start practicing good? No. Am I defined by my condition? Am I sick or am I well? Am I in Christ or am I in the world? And do those things change? Yes. These are all mutable. Am I defined by my role as a child? As a parent, spouse, employee, manager? You could go on and on. Start defining all your roles. Do those actually define you? Not fully, do they? Because you have so many of them throughout your life. In fact, one of the roles I'm going to be talking about here in the near future is the idea, the role of being a caregiver or caretaker, which reality is almost everybody in life, well, everybody in life will have been taken care of by somebody, 100% taken care of by somebody. If you're born in the flesh, somebody took care of you 100%. And reality, oftentimes, we go out that way too. But in the middle of that, most of us are going to be caring for others. And so we go back and forth in that role. And that's one of those roles that is common to every human being. But do that to define us. In fact, let me go back for a moment. Sometimes, think for a moment. You have a family, you know, and they get couple meets, they get married, they start having kids, and then maybe the husband, maybe they have what you might call the old-fashioned, more traditional marriage, where husband's kind of doing working, wife staying at home, raising kids, and dad loses his job. Is he all of a sudden no good? Well, he's not providing what he was, right? So he has to get another job to keep that situation going. What if that father gets disabled? And he can't do it anymore. Oftentimes that father feels worthless and have no value to anybody around them. But it also happens that sometimes that in those families, mom spent these years and years raising children, and then the last of those children leave, and mom feels empty and hollow and worthless. I don't have a job to do anymore. So until they start telling the kids, better start popping out some grandchildren. But those things, see, why does that hollowness and that disappointment and that discouragement and that feeling of worthlessness come upon us when we lose those roles? Because we're defining ourselves by them. But we're much more than that. Those are often temporary roles. And there's something much bigger going to happen for us. We could define ourselves by our desires. What we would like to do. Or our temptations. Or our abilities. I might not be practicing it. In fact, how many of you have ever... Did anybody ever have that situation where somebody told you how great you were at something, and you didn't really like it at all? It's like, oh, you'd be so good at this. You're so talented, and you're so smart, and you're so this, and you're so that. And you're like, but I don't like it at all. It's like, does it define you just because you have that talent? Really? Now, are you defined by flesh and blood? This is kind of a yes and no, right? See, people would like to say, well, I'm not defined by yes and no, or I'm not defined by flesh and blood. A lot of people go, you know, if I want to say I'm a woman, I can say that. If I want to say I'm a man, if I want to say, you know, I'm, you know, any one of a, you know, millions of different varieties of whatever, I can do all that. That doesn't make it reality. And here's the thing is, I'm not defined by flesh and blood alone, because at some point I won't be flesh and blood anymore. And then what defines me? The same thing that really defines me right now. But I don't get the choice about flesh and blood. I was born into it. I didn't choose it. I was born into it, understood it, learned it, figured it out, hopefully have come to use it the way God would want, and I can't change it. No doctor can give me medicine to adjust it. You know, they can make it look different and give surgeries to make you look different. Doesn't change the reality. Can't change your DNA, can't change your cells. We can harm them, we can do things to them, but you're flesh and blood, but only temporarily. And this kind of leads us to the immutable descriptions of us. Here's what's really true about us. We are God's offspring. He said in Acts 17, Paul was standing in Athens at the Areopagus, kind of a place of, you know, their philosophers. They would get together and they would discuss, you know, ideas and things, and they had invited Paul to come and speak to them. And so he was there and he was talking with them. And I want to come down here a little bit in the middle of that talk. He says, you know, he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us. And so he says, Paul tells him, we are all the same. We all have a single ancestor. And we've all been made from that one ancestor. And the reality is God has been around every single one of us every moment of our life. And he is hoping that we will take the opportunity to feel our way to find him. And he says in verse 28, for in him we live and move and have our being, kind of quoting some of their own philosophers. And he says, and even some of your own poets have said, for we are indeed his offspring, talking about God. And he says in verse 29, being then God's offspring, we ought not to think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone or an image formed by the art and imagination of man. One of the reasons why I think God, we could never make an image of God, because any image we would make would be things upon this earth, things we've seen. God isn't any of this stuff. God is outside of this stuff. He made this stuff. He doesn't consist of this stuff. And so we can't make something made that looks like this stuff to represent God. And so, but he says he's acknowledging the reality of what even some of their own poets believe. We are God's offspring. We are his children. That's why every single human being matters to him. In Job 33, Job himself said, I think this was Job, actually, it's Elihu. He says, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. He understood that idea. And in Psalm 104 and verse 30, was also understood by the psalmist. He says, when you send forth your Spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the ground. The whole section here of Psalm 104 talking about the works really of God. And all that he does, and the greatness of God. And he describes that it is God who sends forth his Spirit to create us. We are not simply a creation of our parents. We are partially a creation of our parents. But the eternal part of us is a creation of the Spirit of God. And so we are created in his image, as he said, you know, in Moses talking in Genesis 1, 26, 27. He said, then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens, over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So he made mankind, and he made mankind to be male and female. And you and I didn't get a choice in that. God did that. He did that to, and gave us life. Made like, in some ways, like him. He sent forth his spirit to create us and give us life. Did he do that for the fish? Did he do that for the other animals? No. They're not created in the image of God. Now, they're made of this stuff like we are, like our flesh and blood is. But there's something about us that's different than the rest of the animals. We live temporarily in this flesh, as Paul writes about in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. He says, for we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling. If indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened. Not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. And so he talks about this idea that dying and putting off this flesh is about being further clothed. It's not about, you know, life is only while we're in this tent. No, we're looking forward to a building from God. In fact, I think the concept of a tent and a building are purposeful here. Even going back to the imagery of God's tabernacle and temple, right? A tabernacle, a tent that you just move around, it feels pretty temporary, doesn't it? It feels, it's movable, changeable, wears out real easy. And then you build a stone temple. Unless somebody comes and knocks it down, you expect it to stay there forever. And that's the idea about us. This is a temporary dwelling. That's what makes us sojourners, pilgrims, traveling through. In fact, more and more, the mental image I have of life as a human being, in terms of being God's offspring, is okay, we get life on this earth, and it makes me think of what it's like to be a toddler. From birth to being a toddler. You know? Because think about when children stop becoming toddlers and they start becoming little people. That's a pretty interesting transition for them. Right? I mean, they're toddlers, they just bump around, they fall around, they hit stuff. You know, it's like, oh, it's a good thing they got a lot of fluid around their brains, or they'd have a lot of concussions. And it's like, and then they start to be able to walk better, run better. And all of a sudden they kind of, you know, shoot up a little bit. And everything begins to become like a small person rather than a toddler. But I think life here for us is a lot like just being a newborn, toddler. Then we're waiting for that time when we can kind of become what God intends us to be. And that's what he talks about, Matthew 22. When the Sadducees, they posed a question to Jesus because they didn't believe in the resurrection. And so the Sadducees said, you know, they pose this question of a woman who has a series of husbands, all brothers, seven brothers. And the reason that would happen under the law was that they didn't have children, right? And so the brother was required to marry his brother's widow, to take care of her and to raise offspring for his brother's inheritance. And so that would keep going, right? So they pose this question of seven, it happened seven times, right? Kind of a silly question. But they think it points out the absurdity of the idea of the resurrection. Because they're like, well, obviously, whose wife is she going to be? And his answer to them is, you're wrong, because you know neither the scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels in heaven. There's no marriage in heaven. Already eternal beings. Both male and female are like God. There's that need is no longer there. And he says, as for the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was said to you by God? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He's not the God of the dead, but of the living. He didn't say, I was the God of Abraham. I am the God of Abraham. Abraham's alive. Not I was the God of Isaac. I am the God of Isaac. And so the concept of that we're still, you know, keep fulfilling these roles on earth in heaven is a mistaken notion. And so I'll finish up with this last one in 1 John 3. I'll start in verse 1. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. So he goes, God has loved us, and he calls us his children, and we are his children. He says, the reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, right? We are his children. Like those I picture like those toddlers stumbling around, hitting our head, you know, going, I have no idea what I'm doing with my body. Why is that hand doing that? Like, that's us. We don't know what we're doing. We like to think we know what we're doing. In fact, by the time we're about 16, we think we know a lot about what we're doing. And then we hit 30 and we go, maybe not so much. Then we hit 60 and go, I still have no idea what I'm doing. I thought I knew what I was doing. I don't know what I was doing. Still bounding around. We are his children now. And what we will be has not yet appeared. We haven't seen it. We don't know what it looks like. I don't know what the building from God that will replace this tent is. I don't know what it's made of, consists of. I don't know what it looks like. And that's what he's telling them. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And as he is, we will be, because we are God's offspring who have been raised up to live with him forever. That's who we are. And that's the thing that cannot change. All those other things we define ourselves as, they change. They come and they go. Our abilities come and go. Our desires come and go. What does not come and go is you were made by God, and you will return to God. And he has made a home and a building and a place for you to dwell in that is just like him. That's who we are, and that will never change. So we're going to end there. Appreciate your time this morning. We're going to close out with a song. If you have needs this morning, if you have any thing going on in your life where you need help from others, if we can serve you or help you in anything, and if there's, you know, whether it's studying the scripture, whether it's praying for you, whether it's just giving you a lending hand or spending some time with you. If you have questions, if you have thoughts or anything, if you have needs, please reach out to us in any way you can. Grab somebody in our congregation, grab anyone. But if you want to have the whole congregation be aware of it this morning, go ahead and come on forward. Let's go ahead and stand and sing.